Hello, and a very warm welcome to No Heathen Land, a podcast retelling macabre, intriguing, and just plain weird stories from the past, from God's own country, Yorkshire. In my opinion, Yorkshire is the perfect breeding ground for the most weird and wonderful tales. In Yorkshire, we have the rolling, vast countryside of the Dales, dark, tangled woodlands, remote back roads, but also industry, hard labour, a history of staunch religion, farming, tight-knit communities, immigration, a welcoming attitude, intolerance, riots. Much of this documented, a vast amount not. It's the stories in between the newspaper headlines that I really want to get into. Through my experience working in local history, it's really quite surprising how many odd tales you come across simply by looking into one single person's family history, for example. A newspaper article, a diary entry, a theatre playbill, a photograph. I'm very lucky to have made friendships and connections with interesting and enthusiastic people right here in Yorkshire. Each episode will feature one of them as a very special guest, where we'll delve into some of the stories we've come across that have fascinated, baffled, and sometimes unnerved us. Because of the subject nature of this podcast, some stories will not be suitable for everyone. Approach with caution. Hi listener, and welcome to No Heathen Land, Season 2, Episode 1, brackets Part 1. I hope you're doing really well, and you're excited for this spooky season, because I am. I'm going to get right into it and not crap on here like I usually do. For Halloween this year, I'm joined again by best friend of the podcast on their third visit, Ross Horsley. We discuss three hauntings of sorts, all different and all very fun. This episode was very long, so I decided to split it into two, but they will both be released at the same time. I'll be back at the end of the second part of this episode with information on sources and where to find out more, as always. So go forth and enjoy. Okay, we are on. Hello, Ross Horsley, and welcome back to No Heathen Land.
I'm very happy to be here, thank you very much.
So we're going to get a little bit spoopy today, because it's almost Halloween when we're recording this. And, I mean, there is a curse on the podcast, so I don't want to say it's definitely going to be out for Halloween, because who knows, because something will go wrong.
As long as the curse doesn't transfer to me somehow, I'm fine.
You cursed me on your first visit with the tankard, which I've still got in the cupboard. So maybe that cursed it from the beginning.
You need
maybe
to bury it.
Maybe it's the tank. Of course. No, but isn't someone going to come back and get me if I bury it?
Oh, God. Isn't that don't the bury thing? It. Either bury it or don't bury it.
Anyway, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Currently uncursed, I think.
You think?
We'll find out.
We'll find
perhaps
out.
Perhaps tonight.
So, yes, we're recording this the week before Halloween, so hopefully this is going to be out before. And this is the first episode of what I'm calling Season 2 of No Heathen Land. And who better to have on than my first guest and last Halloween's guest?
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're now best friend of the podcast, whether you like it or not. So, we'll just get straight into it today. And I thought that a good theme for today's episode would be hauntings, since it is spooky Halloween. So we've each chosen three hauntings to share with each other. Now, Ross already knows one of mine, and I don't know any of his, and then he doesn't know my other two, so... I'll start with my first one, I think, because it's so famous, probably the most famous haunted place in Yorkshire, West Yorkshire at least. I think Yorkshire probably, maybe even the country.
Quite possibly.
But we don't care about the rest of the country, so we'll start. So my first one is probably really obvious, so if anyone that likes spooky stuff or maybe true crime or ghost stuff. My first haunting is 30 East Drive, Pontefract. So, I'm actually a bit scared of
haunted places. And it's not, I was saying to you earlier, it's not like the first place that I would want to go. Like, I love scary films or like horror films. Mm. I love like spooky, weird stuff. But I am creeped out by the thought of a haunted house. So I don't think I would ever go and experience one. But you have been to experience one.
I have. I wouldn't say I've been to one where I felt scared. But I have been to these sort of things that they organise around Halloween. Like, I went to one at the Leeds Library and they do all the sitting around having a seance and all that sort of thing. And it is interesting and it's kind of fun. But in my experience, I've never felt particularly... I felt more scared on, you know, those random occasions where you're suddenly just walking down a corridor at work and you realise it's really quiet and then you feel like there's somebody following you or something like that.
Yeah, okay. I just think I'd go in feeling really, like, hyped up. But apparently they say that if you're really scared, then you won't see anything because nothing from the spirit realm will reveal itself to you.
Interesting.
So it's people that are really sort of, yeah, I don't know, maybe don't really pay much attention. Or I don't know, but I would be really sort of creeped out. I just think I'm really easily creeped out by that stuff. but anyway, that's by the by. 30 East Drive, which is in Pontefract, which is West Yorkshire. So I'm just going to read a little bit about the history of this and then we'll go into sort of a couple of videos and then a little bit more about the house and what's happened to it. So I'm going to be reading from Haunted Yorkshire by Nick Tyler, which is just quite a sweet little book, and actually all my hauntings today are in this book. It was a very nice gift from a friend and it's actually coming incredibly useful for the podcast. It's quite a nice little reference book, so just to get a little bit of background on everything. So 30 East Drive, Pontefract is a 1950s built semi-detached house on East Drive and it's been empty for over 10 years. This book was published, I think, probably about 10 years ago, so maybe up to 20 years. The last occupant, Jean Pritchard, having lived alone with Fred, that's a poltergeist, one of the most violent poltergeists on record for almost two decades. When the Pritchard family moved in during the 1960s, the council house was a relatively new build and was as normal as any other situated on East Drive. For a while, the family lived there in relative calm until Philip and Diane entered their teens. So, I like this, like, trope. It's always in a lot of horror films, isn't it? That when you get to your teenage years, that's when spooky stuff starts happening to you, isn't it? That's usually a thing, especially to women, girls. So the first reported phenomenon within the house was witnessed by 15-year-old Philip and his grandmother. They claimed that chalk dust seemed to be falling out of thin air around shoulder height of an average man. This was quickly followed by water mysteriously appearing in patches across the kitchen floor before intensifying even more as the tap was replaced with a thick green slime thought by some to have been ectoplasm that oozed from various taps around the house. I'm worried that they just didn't clean the taps.
Oh, God. I'm more worried about this white powder at sort of head and shoulders height.
Ooh, yeah. That's creepy. That's like low-hanging cloud, isn't it? Which is always quite creepy.
That is actually
what is? I don't know what the significance of this like chalk-like stuff is. Is it like a different take on slimy ectoplasm?
I've never heard of it before. It sounds more like ghostly dandruff.
Maybe that's what it was. So, a mysterious entity soon became violent and began to throw objects around the room before allegedly shifting a solid oak cabinet right across the floor. So this is like spooky horror film stuff, isn't it? So amidst this phenomena that was ongoing, family photographs were reportedly clawed and scratched. Fires were started in various rooms and were extinguished before any real damage occurred. The petrified family called an exorcist to rid the home of the entity within. But as the ritual was being carried out, a candle was said to float in front of the exorcist's eyes before pushing him down the stairs. The family's nightmare continued as a poltergeist turned its attention to their young daughter, Diane, which is where we get, like, the spooky horror film trope, really, who was 13 at the time. Not only did the terrified child wake up with scratches and bite marks all over her, her covers were violently pulled from her in the dead of night and she was slapped across the face numerous times by an invisible presence, the violence peaking when Diane was seen being dragged up the stairs by an unseen entity. And apparently she had marks on her neck as well, like visible, like finger marks where she'd been dragged upstairs. So there's numerous unexplainable cold spots can be felt there, an evil and depressive feeling around the house, which is now about 85 years old. So there is a current owner of the house, which I'll go into in a minute. But I don't think anyone's lived there for, did I say, like, about 20 years? I don't know why, again, I've not really looked into this and what happened to them. We were just saying, like, sometimes it's really hard to find out what happened to the people that this happened to. Like, where did they go? Maybe they were just like, let's get out of here and never talk about it again.
I think they probably are. They probably keep a low profile because people like us would then be trying to track them down and talk to them.
Oh, no, I don't think I would do that. I think that's quite strange. But what it has meant in this house is that it's had a lot of press, let's say. So since the people moved out, died, I'm not entirely sure, loads of videos have been filmed there, and there's also a film that's been made there, which I didn't know about, but you did, didn't you?
Yes,
and it's called, let me check my notes, When the Lights Went Out. And this was, when was this? Did this come out? So if you're listening to this podcast and you like horror films, you might have seen this film. I haven't seen it. You've seen it, haven't you?
Yeah, I want to say it's about 8 or 10 years ago. I remember going to see it at the cinema, actually. And I don't know whether that's because it came out in Yorkshire, because it's kind of a Yorkshire set film.
Oh, 2012.
Oh my
gosh. 2012, so quite a while ago now.
I'm sure it'll have been on TV. It's definitely out on DVD.
Yeah. Yeah, and what did you think of the film?
I quite enjoyed it. You know, it's, as horror films go, it's kind of low key because it's quite domestic and it's quite northern. But I guess that's what makes it different as a film. So it's interesting. It's got some nice period detail. It's a film that's worth watching.
Yeah, and does it, from your memory? I mean, if this was in 2012, I don't think my memory would be very good. Did they show all these things that I mentioned?
Yeah, definitely.
Things moving, being scratched. Yeah. The girl being carried up the stairs.
I think what this sort of film does quite well, why this kind of story resonates, particularly because, as you were saying, there's like younger teenagers there. I think your big fear as a child, one of them, is kind of being accused of stuff you didn't do, like fighting with your siblings or getting blamed for something you didn't do. And poltergeists really feed into that, don't they? They do all the things that you then get blamed for.
Yeah.
And then that works with adults too. Like, there's kids with like fingerprints and bruises, and you're terrified as a parent that you're going to get accused of beating up your kid or something worse.
Gosh, there's all those kinds of creepy things to think about. So apparently there are two ghosts in this house. There's a black monk, and then there's this poltergeist called Fred. And the black monk, apparently on that land, a long, long time ago, hundreds of years ago, a black monk was hanged and then thrown into a well. And apparently the living room in the house is situated over where this well was, and that's where this ghostly monk presence comes from.
I see.
What a spit of bad luck to also get a poltergeist in your house. That's not good, is it? But we just watched a YouTube video that I watched a couple of weeks ago, and it's by Ghost Dimension. And they are a couple of ghost hunters, and they've made this like 50-minute little documentary about going into the house. I thought that it was quite funny. I wasn't keen on the dynamic between the pair, but it's very entertaining to watch, isn't it? We didn't watch all of it together, but I think I watched pretty much the whole thing.
Yeah, I quite like it. I like the fact that you see this house inside out. You see the street, which is quite busy. I think it's on like quite a busy junction or a roundabout.
Like a little sort of roundabout. They're like these really traditional, especially in the north, you get these really traditional like council houses, semi-detached council houses, flat-fronted, nice garden in the front.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's happened is, what we were saying is, I think they must have, the people that own it now or whatever they're doing with it, have left it in this like particular state, and they've like kept up with it looking a certain way. So it's still got like the old TV, it's still got the 70s curtains, it's still got like the quite elaborate stripy wallpaper, and the carpets and everything, and some of the, like, there's a clock at the top of the stairs, which is quite iconic, which apparently fell down the stairs of its own accord at one point.
It's just like Ghost Night ready, isn't
it?
Yeah,
it's ready to go.
Yeah.
It's ready. And I think you can go as like an event. I think it's got its own Facebook page, the house. Fred on his Facebook, getting people to come to the house. And it's probably quite a good money spinner. But I chose this video to watch because it was the most comprehensive one. And they do lots of like quite fun stuff when they go in the house. So they do say as they're walking towards it, they can feel the presence immediately outside. And then they go in and stand in various spots and say, "Oh, it's cold here, it's warm here." at one point, which I don't think you saw in that bit, one of the presenters says that she feels like someone is pushing her arms down a little bit and that she can't lift them up. You know, like when someone presses your arms down for ages. Why did we do that at school? I don't know. Presses your arms down for ages and then you let them go and like float up in the air. Yes. I think that's what she meant. It felt like there's this coal, the top of the coal cellar, which is blocked off. But apparently that's where some of the hauntings were, and said that was really cold. And it felt like you had been drawn in. They ask a lot of questions of these poltergeists and the monk. And from what I could see, they don't really get any answers. But they do hear quite a lot of like knocks and things. But I don't know if that's just an old house. Like, I live in an old creaky house and things are always making noises. And sometimes it might be a bit spooky. But yeah, there doesn't seem to be anything significant that I could see in the video.
No, I mean, I see why it is considered creepy. That coal cellar or yeah. that coal room or whatever it is, that is quite a creepy location.
I think
location.
It's like the top of a coal hatch. And I think you would have maybe been able to go down it. Right. Or the other side might have been mm-hmm. open. So like, I've got friends that lived in houses with like coal hatches and coal rooms growing up, like, but terrace houses. And it was like sort of on the side of the house.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Like a hole in the kitchen sort of thing. So yeah, that is quite weird, isn't it? And then there's a lot of activity in the bedrooms, so they then charge up this like ecto thing. We couldn't quite figure out what it was. They're supposed to charge the energy in the room.
I had never seen this. Basically, it looks like a candle, doesn't it, with kind of an electric spark coming out of it. It looks super dangerous. Do not
super dangerous.
Vape next
like,
to it.
Yeah, like near those 70s curtains. It was very risky. So they charge this thing up and then they film around the upstairs with the lights off. So they've got these like infrared cameras, which is, again, it's quite entertaining because you can see what their faces are doing and they obviously can't, you know, they don't see it until afterwards. And there's a lot of like jumping and screaming. And the bit that stood out to me was they've got this teddy on one of the beds and it's like a sensor teddy. So it's one of those where you can like squeeze its hand or if you tickle it, it'll say like, oh, you're tickling me, or like, hold my hand or something. That in itself is quite creepy. But they're sat on the bed and the teddy's behind them and the teddy sets off a couple of times. One is saying that it's been tickled and one is like the sensor on its hand is saying that it's like been held. I was saying like those toys are like parents' worst kind of toys, apart unless it sings, then that's worse. Second worst, because once you turn them on, they kind of like just do stuff until you turn them off again. So I don't know how. I guess it's quite a fun way of like saying that something might be there.
Yeah, it's a bit of a cheat.
I feel like such a skeptic, and I don't know if I am or not, but it's just, I think the video just really like made me laugh a little bit.
Yeah, I feel like it's just there because dolls and things like that are a bit creepy anyway. Yeah. I don't know. That
it's
whole
sort of
thing
like that squeaky little noise. Like, if you were asleep in a room and everything was dark, someone was like, oh, you're tickling me. I'm like, first of all, it would be weird because I don't have any children. Why would I have a talking teddy in the house? But it was quite weird. And then they have a guy later on in the video. They have another guy come in, and he's like a ghost hunter. And I find him quite endearing. I think he's quite nice. Seems like a nice man, but he takes it quite seriously. And he just sits on the sofa, and he's got what we have now looked up to find out what they are. Something called an Alice box. And an Alice box uses instrumental transcommunication, and it's basically like a tablet on a stick with a camera in it, and it generates words that are supposed to connect you with like the spiritual realm. And this is like a real thing. We've looked it up. It's on my laptop now. They are £580, and basically on his screen it was just coming up with words like walking and demon.
Yeah,
and
it was so strange.
Laugh,
yeah,
and things like that. Really weird. And I can't quite figure out like what it does.
No, I still don't get it. You read it to me, and I was like, so you program the words in yourself?
Well, there's already a word bank, but you can reprogram words in, apparently. And like, if you put your own words in it, then is that still reading something? There's lots of videos that I'm not going to watch. but maybe I should, and stop being such a sceptic. But it's such a, what a strange thing. I'm not entirely sure what it's supposed to tell you.
Or maybe there's something we've missed. Maybe someone else will explain it in a really clear way. But yeah,
so, yeah,
I completely missed the point of
Alice,
what that is.
An Alice box, that's what he's using. And yeah, it comes up with the words walking, demon, laugh, I think there's one that says goodbye or leave or something.
It's like a Ouija board, but
yeah, exactly, kind of like a digital Ouija board. Yeah. That's just a tablet.
Basically.
It's just a tablet on a stick.
With words you've put into it.
Words you put into it yourself. You know, put nice things in, like, tea time.
Soup.
Soup. We've just had some soup, haven't we? So we've got soup on the brain. I mean, I'd love to hear more from people about what an Alice Box is so that I don't have to watch these videos, which I should probably do. So that was his little bit. But my favourite bit was when they interviewed the neighbour. She's called Carol, but apparently she is also like the housekeeper for the house. I've just read that on the website, because we were trying to figure out, because she talks about going in the house and with a team, and I think it's because she cleans the house.
Makes sense.
But she lives next door, and she's a bit of a character, isn't she?
She is.
And she says she's lived there for 29 years, and it's been 29 years of hell, pure hell. And I'm not entirely sure why she's still living there.
No.
If it's very, very bad. I know that people have got complicated circumstances, but if it was that bad, you'd probably want to leave. She basically implies that the house smells of shit.
I like how she wouldn't say that in the video, but it's the first thing you want to say on the podcast.
Yeah, because like, what happens? She's like, well, it smells sometimes in the house. Okay.
She is putting herself in this situation, though. Like, she's not just hating living next door. She's got a job where she has to go in the house every single day.
So they ask her if she thinks it's the most haunted house in Yorkshire or the UK, and she says, from my experience, yes. She says that there are two entities in there. One is the Black Monk, and she says that's quite a scary one. Bit looming presence, and then she said the other one, which is Fred, and they said, can you tell us about Fred? And she says, oh well, Fred's all right, he's 7 foot tall, he's actually called Michael. Which was my favorite bit. And she said, I've had to tell him because, you know, he's going across the road and he's like scaring the older people. And it all goes off on a bit of a tangent. And what I also didn't watch that bit because it was near the end. Apparently there's also a child ghost called Emma.
Oh, I didn't see that bit. You're right. Yeah. So what's the story of Emma?
I don't know. They don't give one. It's what Carol has told us.
So it's a ghost that she's kind of noticed from hanging around the house.
And she says that it's in the ground. What does she say? I think I wrote it down. It's the ground, or the ground that's active, not the bricks and mortar. So she thinks it's something, you know, like lying low underneath that's seeping into her house, which I think is next door. And it sounds very terrifying. Like,
I think that's a really creepy notion, really.
It is, isn't it?
I mean, especially, it's, as you say, it's a really quite busy suburban area.
Yeah. It does look, from the outside, it's completely normal. Like, they've not done anything to say, ghost house this way.
Yeah.
It just looks just pretty normal from the outside. So, going back to the film, when the lights went out.
Mm-hmm.
So, apparently, let's see. Let me get my right notes up. So the director of When the Lights Went Out, Bill Bungay, he's the producer and he's the new owner of the property.
Wow.
So he says, what possessed me, forgive the pun, to buy the most infamous haunted house in Europe, simply because I had recently made a movie about the house called When the Lights Went Out with director and good friend of mine, a native of Pontefract, Pat Holden. After completing the movie, I was looking for original ways of promoting When the Lights Went Out, when I discovered that the actual house where all these incredible events allegedly happened was for sale, and it was cheap. So I bought it. This resulted in the coolest red carpet movie premiere ever, where two competition winners walked a tiny red carpet down the garden path into number 30 East Drive to watch the movie about the actual house.
That is sensational.
I feel like you would have done that.
Oh, absolutely.
I would not have done that.
I love the idea, though, that you really invested in this story, in this particular place, and then you actually buy it.
Yeah. It's quite a cool story, isn't it?
It is.
But it kind of goes a bit south, because so I'll tell you what he says next. So he says, the truth is, despite having visited a very dark house in Coventry and spoken with the family that had been terrorised by a poltergeist, I still remain stoically sceptical. So I'm guessing that it was maybe... The film was maybe by that and this other house in Coventry, which I'll have a look at in a minute. To me, if the Black Monk ever existed, then surely after 40 years it would be long gone, an assumption that proved to be terrifyingly wrong.
I don't understand what he's saying.
So he's saying that he was a sceptic.
Yeah.
And then when he bought the house, lots of weird things happened. Okay. And he's no longer a sceptic.
Oh.
So, I mean, this is quite a long blog post. I'll link this in the description so you can go and read it if you want. But he had several incidents in the house where... So he met Carol from next door. She was quick to inform me that now the house was once open again to visitors, lots of visitors, that the activity had started up again in earnest. And by the way, Fred was stood on the stairs observing us. It turned out that Carol was something of a psychic and had encountered the poltergeist a number of times in her adjoining property. So there's Carol again.
She's quite fine, isn't she? She kind of comes with the house, really.
And it's the way that... I mean, watch the video. Again, I'll link it. The way that she looks and the way that she speaks is just perfect.
She's great.
It's perfect. She's very serious. She's fabulous. So the things that he did was he took a photograph of the crew in the house, which he definitely took, and then it disappeared off his phone and then immediately came back later on. He went into the house after charging his phone. It was on 75%, and then as soon as they left the house out the front door, the battery went flat and died. He says, blaming a technical fault on a perfectly healthy iPhone, but I couldn't let the photo opportunity slip. After I'd recharged my phone, I checked to see if the picture was there to no avail. It wasn't until weeks later that the photo suddenly appeared back on the phone. I was fairly sure I hadn't taken this photo, and I'm certain it wasn't in my photo library immediately after I had recharged my phone, even though I checked it thoroughly. They had also had an incident of some missing keys, and... Then he says, then I witnessed something indisputable with my own flipping eyes. That's what he says. A documentary about the house and the local community was being made, and I took the opportunity to visit the production crew on their last day of filming. Being professionals, we were fairly understated about any events that might have happened while they had filmed at the property. The kettle switching on and superheating of its own volition, the case of constantly missing thermostat, and my personal favourite, possible evidence of the poltergeist's continuing fascination with keys. Mm. Back in the Pritchard's day, so this was the original owners of the house, a bunch of keys consisting of all the keys of the house fell from the chimney when Jean was brushing up the flue, including a peculiar key said to be for a large medieval door. So it was intriguing to me that a bunch of keys belonging to one of the production team had gone missing. The crew hunted high and low for the keys, but had given up finding when someone had the idea to look inside an old vacuum cleaner I had purchased from a charity shop to dress the house. To my knowledge, it doesn't even work, and even if it did, would never have the power to suck up a heavy bunch of keys. Plus, I suspect you'd notice if you did. So keys inside there.
That is strange.
Yeah, and then there was an instance when he went out to put something in the bin, and he said that, I really identify with this feeling, when you're really scared about something, and so you say over and over in your head what you're doing. So he's like, I'm walking to the bin outside. I'm putting something in the bin. And then he turned back to the house and couldn't get back in. Like, there was something blocking the door on the other side while people were in the house. And then he said all the crew ran out because they all felt, like, worried about something. And nothing was blocking the door on the other side.
Ooh, that's quite creepy.
So weird, isn't it? So there is, like, a sort of, like, amended bit on the end. So he feels like he's sort of, like, the poltergeist is constantly, like, missing him by like a hair, but it also says that, like, no one wants to buy this house now. I'm not sure what to do with it, but I'm guessing that he does all these. If it's still him that owns it, I think it is. So this amendment is actually from 2016, so he might have sold it by now. But yeah, creepy house, creepy story. Like, it's one of those things that nothing's ever seemed to have been resolved about it. And people sort of go to visit and do these haunted videos. There are loads of videos on YouTube of people going to his house, and in the comments on all the videos it's things like, I've been, I didn't experience anything, I've been, it was really creepy, and saying I could hear this and I couldn't hear this and I saw this. And
You see, I don't know what it is about me, but I would like to go. I don't really believe in any of this stuff until I might be proven wrong, but I would still like to go. But
you could definitely go. Apparently,
is it too far away? Is it?
It's really close. It's West Yorkshire, so that's where we are.
I have to check it out.
Yeah, I was. I kind of intended, but my car has been poorly until the beginning of this week, to drive past and go and have a little nosy. So if I go and do a little recce, you can come with me.
Definitely.
If you like. I'm not going in.
No.
Your car.
Just
you
knock
go,
on the door.
You can go and stand at the gate. You go call for Carol.
Yeah.
She'll tell you a good story. So that's my first one. Yeah, I think it's a really interesting story, and it is kind of creepy, especially the stuff with the film producer. I think as a fictional story for a filmmaker of that kind, I think they tend to be sceptics, don't they, rather than trying to make a serious documentary about it. And the film is a serious film, but I would say that they're probably more sceptical than most.
Well,
so to sort of admit that they'd experience these things afterwards and then still saying, I would kind of like to sell this house, actually.
Exactly, yeah.
It's weird, isn't it?
It is, I think. Yeah, I mean, when you film a story like that, you see it inside out. You sort of, you probably even get bored of it. So for him then to go on and find himself actually kind of affected by these things, it is, you're right, it is quite a spooky notion.
It is spooky. So, moving on from Spook House, what is your first haunted? I'm so excited because I don't know any of yours.
Well, are we moving on from Spook House? Because my first one is a house as well. And it's really interesting that you picked a house that you could claim is basically one of the most haunted houses in the area, if not the country, based on the sheer amount of supernatural activities that has taken place there. Mm. I think this one also can go for that title as well.
Okay.
But not because of the activity, although it is very active. It's more the number of ghosts that are associated with the place.
Okay.
Well, I found at least 9. But I might expand on that.
Are you talking
moment.
About the TV show Ghosts?
Sadly not.
Which is fabulous, by
Do
the
know,
way. I love
I've never
it.
Watched it. What's wrong with me?
It's good.
I've heard nothing but
it's
good about that show.
It's very heartwarming and sweet and funny.
I need to watch it.
And fun. Yeah.
Well,
there we go.
Recommendation.
Yeah.
But, yeah, as I say, going by sheer number of ghosts, this has pretty much a claim to being one of the most haunted houses of all time, potentially. Mm-hmm. Funnily enough, my mum sent me a brilliant statistic this week, and this was about the number of ghosts that have been reported in Yorkshire, or the number of sightings. And I don't know what it means, like where these are recorded or reported, but apparently Yorkshire has had 789 ghost sightings, which I don't know if that's either a lot or not very much. I don't know.
It doesn't seem like a lot.
It
Yorkshire's
depends, as I
say.
Big. Like, who is it reported by? Is it reported by
just one person,
emergency responders or something? to the scene. But she also clarified that most of those are in West Yorkshire as well, so that's the most haunted part of the most haunted county.
Gosh.
And of course it's a big county, and actually the house that I've alluded to already is a very big house, and I'm sure you've heard of it, as has everybody who lives in Leeds. It's Temple Newsome. And I know it's an obvious choice, but it's kind of the biggie, and that's why I wanted to read more about it.
We mentioned Temple Newsome. Did we mention it in the first episode?
We
I think we just mentioned
to.
It in passing, and I said, I should probably do an episode about Temple Newsom at some point, because it is so, there's so many stories about it, and I've been today as part of my job.
I
I've been to Temple
it.
Newsom today.
Was it spooky today?
It was very, very wet and windy, and actually it was very beautiful because all the leaves were falling off the trees and it was very spectacular. But I didn't see anybody because it was raining and no one was out.
Whenever I go, it's always quiet. I think I once went on Halloween to do a talk there. And there was hardly anybody there. They'd sort of put these slightly creepy decorations outside, which were actually genuinely creepy. It's an interesting place.
It is.
I don't feel like I've done it justice. I've never truly kind of gone round just for the sake of going round. I've always been there for an event or to do something.
Yeah, same, to be honest. I think I might have mentioned this because I must have been talking to you in our last Halloween episode. I said that one of the assistant curators, she's not there anymore, unfortunately, but she took me around after I'd given a talk there,
so good.
And told me all, because it was, I think it was actually on Halloween, told me all these spooky stories, and it was really creepy.
I can just
but
imagine.
So fun. Like,
yeah, because it's one of those houses, isn't it, where there's a real distinction between the sort of the servants' part of the house and the family part
absolutely.
Of the house, which probably is the same with many a house like that, but you really see it there.
It definitely feels, well, it is physically cold in the bottom of the house. I think we've been able to go there more than most people would because of the jobs that we've done previously.
Mm-hmm.
So we've kind of been allowed in those bits where there's like meeting rooms and things, rather than in the rest of the house. So go ahead, tell us about
the
ghosts.
Well, here are some of the ghosts. So as I said, there's at least 9. I found these out by looking in books, by looking online. Some of them are just a mention. Some of them you get a whole backstory. So to begin with the sort of lesser kind of described ones, there's 2 in one room called Darnley's Chamber, which is one of the most famous rooms of the house, I think.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little boy who comes out of a cupboard.
Ew, I hate
that. Creepy. And my third story involves a cupboard as well. So what is it about cupboards and coal sheds and that sort of stuff? And then also, obvious. Oh, hello, Wallace.
The cat's here to just sit. I was going to sit on your paper.
I'll pick my paper up. So obviously the house goes back to the times when the Knights Templar kind of were resident there. So of course there's a knight that also haunts the house.
Mm.
There's also a room called the Long Gallery, which is mentioned by Lady Mary Mayall, who lives there, in a brilliant autobiography from the 1930s called something like Sunlight and Shadows Over a Long Life. It's a really good little book, actually.
I've heard of that.
She does a few good pages on what it was like to live there and how it was kind of unavoidable that you'd sort of have creepy experiences, whether you attributed them to ghosts or not. But she reported things like screams and sighs. And the Long Gallery is a place where a monk-like figure in a brown habit has been reported, and that is associated with the sighing
noises. I've
heard
about a monk story as well. That kind of silhouette.
Yeah, it's quite common, isn't
it,
in ghost stories. And they're always really tall, like that one in Fred, 7 foot tall or whatever. There's a room at Temple Loosen I don't remember particularly seeing called the Red Room. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, is it? I think it's one of the bedrooms, isn't it?
Oh, it must be.
I think that might be wrong, but I think it's one of the bedrooms.
I feel like
and
all haunted houses have a Red Room, and it's quite creepy. Well, apparently that you can hear screams in that. And there's also a bedroom called Room Number 4 where the door swings shut on its own accord.
Why is it called Room Number 4? Why is it?
I think it's just
it
what the
creepy
staff call it.
Oh, okay.
But that room as well is also haunted by phantom balls. So I read that wrong, and I was like, "What, like bouncy balls?" But it's actually the idea that when they used to have like a ball in the room, they move all the furniture to the edges of the room, and of course that scraping noise on the floor.
Yes, I've heard about this, about people hearing like long dresses moving along the floor.
Yes, I've heard that too.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing, really, I mean, we've said 9 ghosts, but if they're literally having a ball up there, I mean, that could add another 30 odd ghosts.
What are they still doing there?
Oh, yeah. But then the other 3 ghosts are the most famous, mm-hmm. and these are the ones that are apparently linked to actual historical events.
Yes.
So there's Phoebe Gray, the oldest ghost. Well, not necessarily the oldest ghost, but the oldest that's recorded.
Yeah.
And there's a kind of a legend associated with her that on this hot summer night in 1704, she was killed by a fellow servant following a party, and he dragged her body into the cellars and threw it in a well. And he was actually sentenced and hanged, I should say. Ever since, her ghost is said to haunt the back stairs and the passages of the house.
Creepy.
And then there's also the White Lady, who is the probably less famous of the two ladies, that walk the halls there. She's Lady Jane Dudley. Her story is also sort of one of these tragedies. Basically, she was in love with Lord Darnley, who married Mary, Queen of Scots, and she hanged herself when she found out that she was not the one who'd been picked by him. And she continues to haunt Temple Newsome. But I think everybody knows the most famous one, which is the Blue Lady. Have you heard of the Blue Lady before?
I have heard of the Blue Lady before.
Neither of us went to school in Leeds, did we?
No.
But I think if you went to school in Leeds, you would probably chat a lot in the playground about the Blue Lady, especially if you've been on a visit to the house or something like that. And there's this kind of lovely kind of playground chant that you come across when you read about this online, where people remember sort of chanting, "Blue Lady, Blue Lady, you killed your blue baby."
Oh,
I know. I
don't
know
horrible.
What. I don't. Well, it's also bizarre because it has nothing
to
do with the story. The story does not mention a baby.
Yeah.
Basically, the ghost of the Blue Lady is supposed to be Mary Ingram, who lived there in the late 17th century. She wasn't murdered or killed or anything, but she was robbed in her stagecoach, and the highwayman made away with her favourite piece of jewellery.
Yeah.
So basically, this kind of, she loses her mind after this event.
Mm.
She becomes convinced she's actually lost. They don't say really what kind of, some people say it's a pearl necklace, some people say it's just her favourite piece of jewellery.
Yeah, I heard it was a pearl necklace.
But so she's supposed to haunt the halls looking for this, like trapped in this loop of never being able to find it. But yeah, I love the way it's permeated the kind of the psyche, and that all the school kids in the area, some of them are actually scared of this figure.
Yeah.
One of my friends actually He admits to having a little bit of an overactive imagination. When he was a kid, he and his class were all doing handwriting practice, and he accidentally scribbled some letters across the next page or something like that. They were MG. And he convinced his friends that he'd been contacted by a spirit called Meg. So, of course, they all went out to the playground searching for Meg. And I just love these kinds of stories that go back to the things you kind of half invent when you were a kid.
Yeah. Yeah, it's such a good story. And there's a portrait of her.
There
in
is.
In the house, which I've seen. It's a very nice portrait.
I don't remember actually seeing it. There's some whole thing about it. She's supposed to have a scar on her face or something.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I've not seen it for a few years. I think she's wearing... Oh, sorry, I was told this. In the portrait, she's wearing the jewellery.
Oh, I love that.
I think so. Well, I really hope I'm not getting this totally wrong. And, you know, I'm not going to check it, so...
Did.
Once again, as always in every book, just don't come for me. Because you can just look it up yourself.
Did you, when at your school, did you all have a kind of a ghostly legend that kind of everyone talked about?
We had, so at my primary school, if anyone went to school in Yorkshire, you might have gone and like, it's like your first residential stopover that you go on. And we only ever, I only ever did it in primary school, we didn't do any in high school. In my primary school, we went to a place called Scout Dyke,
mm-hmm.
where I think everyone in Yorkshire went for like a residential. And like thinking back, it was really like, pretty run down, so I don't know what's happening there now. It's probably very nice now. And there's a ghost legend there called Peg Leg. Anyone that's listening from your, especially South Yorkshire, will have been, and everyone would be screaming at this saying, oh my god, Peg Leg. And it was just like a guy with a peg for a leg that would come and get you. And like we had like these little tiny water. I just remember I must have only been like 10 or 11 at the oldest. And we had these like little beds next to each other I shared with my friend, who's still my best friend now. And we had these tiny little wardrobes, and in our wardrobe, someone had written Peg Leg in it.
Oh my god.
I really should look this up a bit more because it was just so stupid. What does he want? Why has he got a peg for a leg, or like a wooden leg? It's probably not a nice thing to say about someone, is it? But yeah, that was the big one for us, I think. That everyone knew.
I kind of wish I grew up in Leeds and heard the story of the Blue Lady because it
yeah,
just
know,
seems
good,
so iconic.
Yeah. Yeah, so I don't know why I didn't think that you were going to do Temple News, it just didn't cross my mind, but yeah, it's quite a special place.
It's brilliant.